tell you time and time again how much I care.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Of course, that was Lionel Richie. Hello came out today in 1984. And a song that some people love and some people don't. I'm sappy enough to like it. So here we are. We are talking now in the course of this next part of the Mark Steiner Show. We're going to devote again to this question of RAD, the Rental Assistance Demonstration Program, which has come to Baltimore, Baltimore being one of the key test sites in the country, where the management of 40% of the public housing units in Baltimore City will be given over to private entities, profit and nonprofit, for-profit and nonprofit entities, and some nonprofits that are tied very closely to for-profit entities. And many of those entities are in neighborhoods that are being developed. So people, of course, question what that means and where that is taking public housing. And we know that public housing money, and we'll talk about the exact amounts, have drastically reduced since 1980. Commissioner Graziano was on the show not long ago, talked about how he could not afford to take care of public housing. They did not have enough money in their budget to do it. And that this program, RAD, the Rental Assistance Development Program, that actually began under President Nixon, President Bush, but under a different name, is transformed into this under President Barack Obama. And the Secretary of Housing was here just this last week, and he said this is not privatization. He said that what we're looking at here, coming to Baltimore, and let me get this quote right, he said that this is will allow Baltimore to convert 4,000 units of public housing to a time-tested platform that we call Section 8 that provide more reliable funds and, most importantly, to unlock the potential to bring hundreds of millions of dollars to other resources, saying public housing is the only form of affordable housing in the country that cannot access low-income housing tax credits provided by the state and other affordable housing resources. It's been locked out, Secretary Donovan said. This was a quote from the Baltimore Brewer article. So we are taking that. We did ask Commissioner Graziano's office to join us. They declined at this point. The commissioner was not in town, but also that they did. They said all they have to say on this at the moment. They're moving ahead, not looking back. We've asked HUD to join us, and they were considering it. So I have not heard a complete yes or no. Will there be a surprise with a call from HUD during the course of our conversation? We will find out. But we are here now in studio with activists and people who live in public housing. We're here with Jeff Singer, who has, of course, been one of our main figures and a consultant on the show just about helping us think through what all this means in terms of public housing. Jeff Singer is a founder and former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless, now an instructor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work.
Good morning, Mark.
Good to see you, brother. Jessica Lewis is with us. Jessica Lewis is a housing organizer at the Right to Housing Alliance, and she's also an OSI Baltimore Community Fellow. Good to see you again, Jessica.
Thanks, Mark. Good morning.
And we'll bring you back in a few minutes. We'll bring back the gentlemen who are all in the studio as well, who are in the studio now, so I'll introduce them now. We're here with Floyd Gross, who is tenant council president at the J. Van Story Branch Building, which we call the Blue Building, sitting behind North Avenue. Floyd Vines is with us, who lives in that housing place as well, and a retired city worker. And Mitch Peterson is with us, a public housing resident.
Good morning, Mark.
We met the other day for the first time. He lives down the Chase Building, right?
Right.
And Mark Schumann is with us. He's a resident of the Wyman House Building, one of the buildings that the city is selling in a section of town that people would love to see developed. He's editor of the Baltimore Street newspaper, Word on the Street, member of HUN, Housing Our Neighbors, and his homelessness ended as a result of moving into public housing. And Mark, good to see you as well.
Yeah, good morning.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. So let me ask the two of you first, Jeff, Jessica. Before we go to the phones and we have a couple people calling in, we'll get to those calls. I'll tackle the question of privatization or not privatization in a moment. But what does it mean when the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Housing says, under President Obama, that this is the only way that unlocks hundreds of millions of dollars to give tax credits for affordable housing for the poor, for people in poverty, and that that's what this is doing because the monies just are not there to fix up public housing. So what does that mean? I mean, is that because? But if you read this, it says, then this must be a great idea, right?
Well, I think that initially,
Jessica Lewis.
Sorry, jumping ahead there. You know, it's not a matter of whether we have the money to prioritize public housing to pay to you know, create public housing and make sure that we're not leaving people who have housing needs out and create more homelessness from that. It's a matter of priorities and whether we're prioritizing funding for public housing, and we're just not. And we've seen that over the last 30 years, the defunding of HUD. It looks like the government is systemically eradicating public housing as, you know, a matter of policy. It looks like, you know, the policies are aimed at just eradicating it and creating this situation of millions of homeless people over the next, you know, period of time as they're further diminishing the government's responsibility to provide affordable housing for the poorest residents.
And Jeff, so why is this not a good thing? From given what everything that the secretary has said, I'm sure an honorable man has said that this is the way to unleash hundreds of millions of dollars for public housing. Why is this not a good thing?
It was rather shocking to read that quotation, Mark. I'm sorry that we all weren't invited to meet with the Secretary of HUD when he was here, by the way.
I wonder why.
Yeah. the dismantling of public housing, one could say, began in 1974 when the Section 8 program was created. The Section 8 program is a way to privatize any spending from the federal government on housing that's affordable to poor folks.
Privatize, you mean because the money being spent will go to people who own buildings people will move into. Is that what
yes,
you
it goes to private landlords. Okay. So the Section 8 program, begun in 1974, directly subsidizes private landlords. A very bad idea, and the country began to reduce funding for public housing when they began to fund the Section 8 program. But then in 1986, the Reagan administration created the low-income housing tax credit, an even worse idea, because it's more profits for developers not just to manage buildings and get subsidies, but to build the buildings with public subsidies. And when the secretary says, well, public housing's been locked out of low-income housing tax credits, that doesn't even make any logical sense. The public housing is supposed to be built, owned, operated, and maintained for folks who can't afford to be in the private housing market. And the low-income housing tax credit is a way to take money out of what could have been public housing, build housing in the private sector, make a profit. It's for investors. The credits are traded by equity partners, by hedge funds.
Like the mortgage, mortgages being bundled, sold across the globe in the same way.
Precisely.
Right.
So the low-income housing tax credit is another way to create profits out of a human need, a need for housing. And there was no reason to include public housing in that if we just funded public housing with tax dollars. There's no reason that anyone should ever make a profit from a public good like public housing.
But one of the arguments – okay, Jessica.
I was just going to add to that when you know we're subsidizing private landlords to provide affordable housing and low-income housing through this voucher program, we see in Baltimore the results of that when property managers specifically target tenants who have vouchers, and we don't see the conditions. You know, we're assuming that these people have the capital to keep up the maintenance on their buildings, but what we see is that what they're doing is they're providing the same level of quality that we're seeing in public housing already. They're taking that money and they're able to make a profit off of it, but the result isn't any better. And it's just allowing them to maximize profit at the expense of the residents that we're you know paying for. You know, some of our some of Right to Housing Alliance's members just filed a class action lawsuit against a private landlord who's doing just that. You know, the specifics of the lawsuit aren't about the conditions issues, but we do see that same, you know, that same sort of failure to provide low-income housing through those programs in the private market.
So now I do want to open the phone to get other guests in this conversation at 410-319-8888. And I see we have our first two callers up. We're going to get to those two callers before we go to break, I hope. Yes, we will get those before we go to break. But is it true? I'm very serious about it. Is it true that given the conditions and the cutbacks in public housing funds, from the federal government. It started back in the late 70s, early 80s, up till now. What were the numbers? It's gone from...
In 1978, the federal government provided what would be equivalent today to about $90 billion
right.
for affordable housing. Today, the HUD budget's about $42 billion. So it's less than half of what we did in 1978.
So, and we also know that America really didn't have homelessness to any great degree before this. That homelessness also came out of this housing crisis that pushed people into the streets. But is Commissioner Graziano correct when he says that the funds are not there, that we do not have the $800 million to fix up these houses, and we have to find a different way to fix them up, which is why we have RAD? That's the argument, that it's going to cost $800 million to maintain and fix up the housing units as they are in Baltimore City now, the ones that are available, which don't even come near to taking care of the needs of most of the people in the city who require that housing, but that the money isn't there, and this is the only fiscally conceivable way of maintaining and fixing up these houses, this housing.
Well, my initial thought is where's the money coming from that we're going to be issuing these huge tax credits? I mean, how much are they going to receive in tax benefits from city funds versus how much, you know, are they going to be paying out to fix these properties? Because I think if I'm correct, I think those numbers are pretty similar. And maybe Jeff can explain this.
Well, I can try. It's also complicated. Who in the world can understand it? It's like Obamacare applied to housing. You know, you create the most complicated method with the most mechanisms to make profits in every aspect of it. And you do that for healthcare, and now they're doing that for housing. And they've done it for schools, you know, through the Pell Grants and all those privatized loans. And they've done it for prisons, and they even do it for parking in Chicago. Privatize every aspect of the economy so profits can be made there. But to address this more specifically, are there alternatives? I think there could be. And we ought to be exploring them as assertively as we can. And one that I've mentioned a few times is there are general obligation bonds that the city issues every 2 years, about $120 million worth. We've never issued a penny of them to rehab public housing. I believe the commissioner confirmed that last week when we were on the radio. There's no reason we can't do that. We need to get the mayor's attention, because they prefer to do it for other reasons, and they give lots of money to developers, right? The city of Baltimore gives lots and lots and lots of money to developers. We just gave maybe between $400 and $600 million to the developer of Harbor Point, who, by the way, has made enormous campaign contributions to the folks who are giving the tax breaks. But aside from that, there's money available in general obligation bonds. That maybe not $300 million, but there's certainly some money. There's also state bonds that apparently are being issued for this purpose.
So I have another question about the bonds, but we'll come back to that in a moment. But I reintroduce our guest, the other guests here in the studio, who I don't think have contributed great amounts of money to anybody's political campaign. But let me introduce you all again. Floyd Gross is with us, who is a tenant council president at J. Van Story. Floyd Vines is an activist, retired state and city worker who lives in J. Van Story. Mitch Peterson's with us, public housing resident who lives in Chase, is very active in this community as well. Mark Schulman, who is editor of Word on the Street and lives at Wyman House building, which is another building that the city is putting up for the selling as well. Who was homeless before he moved into public housing. 410-319-8888 is the number. Let's get a couple calls in here and let all you gentlemen and lady kind of wax forth. And one of you, Floyd, doesn't have a real mic. Which one is it? You don't have a real mic. So we'll share that back and forth, right, to make sure we know what we're doing. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing? So generally most housing, it's a federal program. It's funded by the federal government. But, you know, unfortunately, the housing department hasn't managed the properties real well anyway. So, and you guys mentioned about floating bonds for developers and stuff. So, you know, it's not just the responsibility of the federal government. The state and the city should be involved in this. I don't want to rant, but, you know, the Grand Prix, $7 million in federal funds, and the lead abatement issue, where a lot of housing that was contaminated by lead dust and lead, and the city decided to fight, spend $4 million to hire outside litigators to fight that and lost. And it actually got to the point where the Baltimore City Sheriff's Department was getting ready to foreclose on city vehicles. Here's one of the suggestions. So they're going to open up, eventually, the gambling casino in the city's going to open up. This might be difficult, and they'll fight it all the way. But maybe renegotiate some of those contracts. Some of the proceeds from the gambling, whatever it is, 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, whatever you can get, that gambling money proceeds has to go to public housing.
Bruce, interesting idea.
Excellent idea.
Gentlemen, welcome to the conversation. Good to have you with us. Anybody like to jump in here very quick before we go to the next caller up?
Floyd Vinesmore, and I agree with Bruce. I think that some of the monies that we have coming in through the gambling industry should be directed towards public housing as well as education. Right now, me and Jeff were talking earlier. What's more frightening to me is not that they've mismanaged here in Baltimore public housing, which I would say if they did it intentionally, then I'd have some relief. But I think they're doing it because they're incompetent, and I can't believe we have people at this level as managers and such an important issue as housing doing what they're doing. Jessica's seen it. All of us here have been aware of this, and I think right now is the time we have to make a stand. I hate to use those terms like stand your ground, but if they're going to take housing and give all profits being the driving force behind it, here in our community, we have to say something about it, and we have to say something strongly.
I'm going to go back to once again the caller, and here's any of you gentlemen want to jump in real fast before we get to those callers again.
We got
to get the microphone over to you. I'm sorry.
My name is Floyd Gross, and I'm a resident president of J. Van Story Resident Council. Now, basically, my concerns are that we as residents are going to be displaced sooner or later, and we need some kind of assistance to help us stay on the right track, to keep the big business or capitalism from flooding us and running us out of our homes.
Because all the place we're talking about here, where the four of you live, those three locations, think about where they are.
Yes, yeah. Mitchell Peterson here.
You live right in the middle of Mount Vernon.
I live right in the middle of Mount Vernon, affluent neighborhood. And I'm pretty sure that if capitalism goes through and they go through with this particular issue here, that a lot of people are going to be out of homes. Not only are they going to be out of homes, but a lot of people are going to be out of jobs. Because privatization will mean that the city workers are no longer there. My concern is that how long are we going to be here? If the federal budget keeps getting defunded, what's going to end up happening is that it's going to be $10 billion in 10 years. That means no homes, no housing. And I think everyone should really take notice and really open their minds up and try to come together on this issue. Therefore, we can try to do something to change it.
Mark, you were about to say something?
Yeah.
Get the mic in front of you again. I'm sorry.
All right.
I have to share that mic.
Yeah, I live in Wyman House, which is right in the middle of Johns Hopkins area. And rumor has it, and this is one thing we really want, is some information would be great. We're not getting all the information we need. It's like maybe this is going to happen, maybe that's going to happen. We haven't got any conclusive information as to what they're going to do. And the fear with the residents in my house is that Hopkins is going to take it over and that we're going to be either put out or they're going to use attrition to fill it up with Hopkins students. And whether this is true or not, I don't know, because that's the problem. We have not received official information on it.
That is the point I do want to come back to. I'm going to go back to the phones here. We need to come back, because part of this has to do with the debate we had with Graziano on this program over what's in the RFP, what is being promised to the people who are going to manage these homes. That's where the clarity has to be, because it's in this fog that none of us understand. And I think that all people I've talked to, Jeff, you seem to have a deep understanding of what's in that thing. Other than most of us, I've not read the whole. Anybody else read the whole thing in here? No. But So we'll come back to that. Have you read the whole thing yet? No. 410-319-8888. Reverend Daki Napata, you're on the air.
Mark, thank you so much for having this discussion. I just was at an emergency meeting, and for folks who may not know who I am, Reverend Daki Napata. I was trained by Reverend Vernon and Daniel Dobson, who he, with the Goon Squad and Homer Favor, who was also out there at Morgan at the Urban Institute,
right.
They were able, with Grandmaster Sam Daniels, the Masons, to build public housing, Zion Towers, Orchard Mews, and a whole range of things, because the church is not too far from McCullough home. The point I'm calling for is that we had an emergency meeting I was called to, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to be in town and go there, and I live not too far from McCullough Homes now. And it was around the fact that there was a whole lot of information about that the city of Baltimore had sold McCullough Homes projects, you know, to a private investor, a no-bid contract to a private investor, a developer out of New York City. And all I'm saying is we've seen this before, and we refuse to stand and let it happen. So there's a coalition. We're calling for an emergency meeting. And so for persons that experts that you have, including the tenants, we've raised the concern and gotten a commitment from different lawyers. Arnold Jolivet, in particular, has volunteered his services. We're going to be approaching Monumental Bar, my consulting firm. We have a lawyer on board, but we're going to give pro bono free legal advice also. And the point is this, and I'll stop, and thank you for hearing me.
Sure, go ahead.
There's a historical context. It's not only poor, and it's not only capitalist. It is black. And I say that because if folks remember, myself and Bob Cease and Three Generations of Struggles years ago, we dealt with this spatial deconcentration that happened after the riots in 68. There was a federal impoundment of experts after the Kerner Commission report that said there were two different realities in America, one black and one white, institutional and personal. Mm-hmm. And then they revisited that 20 years later. But basically, the Section 8 housing didn't just come out of the 1974, as my man mentioned, the gentleman on the show mentioned. That came as a policy issue, yes. It came after a study of how to keep these inner cities from exploding with all this black population in Detroit and D.C. and Baltimore. And they came up with a program called Spatial Deconcentration that was run by a guy named Anthony Downs, and Bob Emery also was a part of that when he was over at HUD back in the day. And that Section 8 housing came out of how to remove these inner city families. In Baltimore, they moved my family from inner city Jewel Avenue near the projects to Cherry Hill. They move other folks to Holland Ridge. And with a Section 8 voucher, they can move you any place in the country. You know. And so I'm just saying that to say that we need this emergency ingathering of all the expertise, like the ones on this show, and the tenants. The tenants have a right to not only have the right of first refusal, they can buy their own projects if they choose to. But we have to say to this mayor and these no-bid contractors, right, that are getting contracts out of state, and as the gentleman mentioned, kicking money back into their campaign funds, that no. My mother lives in Cherry Hill. She used to live in McCullough Homes. Pat Turner bought a lot of property down there. The word is that Donald Trump may be trying to buy Cherry Hill, and they're getting all these waivers at the Board of Estimates and the Board of Public Works. And we say, hell no, we ain't going nowhere.
And, Daki, I think most people in this room are with you, and I think that this may be sparking something of a movement in Baltimore that has not happened before in a long time. And I think that I made the comment only half jokingly when I met with some of these gentlemen on Friday, briefly, when Jessica and I was meeting, and I looked at Mitch Peterson, who was in the room, and I said, what's going to happen is that I predicted that Cherry Hill will go because it's on the water. Hmm. And you can't have poor people living on the water. They don't know what to do with it. Right. So, in all seriousness, you can see this kind of creeping move, which is pretty scary because we don't have a plan. We don't know, nothing's on paper. But all the earmarks are there for something that could be detrimental to the living conditions of the four men and all the tens of thousands of people around these men.
And Mark, Floyd Vines. I think Dr. Napata pointed out something, and I tried to bring to the attention of some church members yesterday or some pastors, that places like Zion Towers that aren't currently owned by HUD are funded. Most of the residents there receive vouchers. And I was trying to help them understand that a lot of their congregation members live in those places, but they're going to be affected directly too. Because if they're going to, like you say, people that are low income don't deserve to live on waterfront property.
That was a joke, but only half joking. Because remember, in Annapolis, they tried to move people out lived in the water. The residents had to win that fight. Developers were saying, move these people out because they wanted that waterfront property to build expensive high rises on that land. So it was a joke, but it wasn't a joke.
But as Mark pointed out, we here at Van Story are aware that MICA students, University of Baltimore law students and students in general, and Hopkins students. These are prime properties, but these are properties that people of low income have lived in for years that are now being threatened. And whether it's the low rises, McCullough Homes, or places of that nature, everybody in this city, at some point in time, if you haven't had a 401k or a golden parachute, are going to get elderly, they're going to get old, they're going to get on a fixed income. And if you take this form of housing from them, low-cost housing, you're going to really be a detriment to our society going forward.
Go ahead, Jeff, then we're going to get to the phones.
Just
again.
Two quick points. I don't want the housing commissioner calling in and saying, you're telling all the residents that they're going to be forced out of their homes.
I'm not saying that.
No. None of us are saying that that's right. What the RAD program will do, because the regulations of RAD say, no, you can't do that.
Right.
You've got to let the tenants stay in their homes. You've got to get the new tenants from the waiting list. That's good, but what are those promises worth when the city of Detroit, for example, just suddenly stops paying the pensions for the people that used to live there?
That's right.
Or there are 70,000 fewer Section 8 certificates today than there were a year ago because the federal government has a sequester and they've taken the money away. What are the guarantees that people will actually be able to stay given the way market forces work? None of these developers are going to go bankrupt or foreclose. It will never happen. Really?
We are going to take a very brief break and come back. Tim and Jacqueline, you're the next callers up. We're going to come right to your calls with our six guests in here in the studio, 410-319-8888. Join this conversation. We are going out with The Magic Number by De La Soul, because on this day in 1970, Mace of De La Soul was born. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Was born three, they stubborn me, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?
Difficult preaching is posthumous pleasure. Pleasure in preaching starts in the heart. Something that stimulates the music in a measure. Measure in the music, raising three parts. Casually see, but don't do like the soul. Cause seeing and doing are actions for monkeys. Doing hip hop, hustle, no rock and roll. Unless your name's Brewster, cause Brewster's a punk. Parents let go.
I know I say this all the time, but War is one of my favorite groups of all time. And that is Low Rider. On this day, Lee Oscar was born in 1946. Young man was born on this day. And we're sort of going, playing that to say happy birthday to Lee Oscar, Low Rider. And reminding you on the way back to the conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. Remember, when you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. It's not just a bank, it's a credit union, belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner at the top of our page for MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. We are here with Jeff Singer, founder and former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless, now teaching at the Maryland School of Social Work. Jessica Lewis is a housing organizer with the Right to Housing Alliance, and also an OSI Baltimore Community Fellow. Floyd Gross is president of the Tenants Council at the J. Van Story Building at North and Howard. No, North and
20th
Street. And Floyd Vines, who lives in that building, is an activist and a retired city worker. Mitch Peterson, public housing resident in the Chase Building.
Chase House.
And Chase House. And Mark Schumann, who is a resident of Wyman House, that also one of the buildings being sold, editor of Word on the Street, member of HUN, Housing Our Neighbors, and he was homeless until he moved into public housing. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to Facebook pages. 410-319-8888. And Tim, you're on the air. Tim, welcome. You're on the air. Hi, Tim, you there?
Hello, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you for calling.
Okay. And I think this has been answered. I wanted to get a hard definition for public housing. We're talking about properties that are in the city's portfolio, entitled to the city. Is that correct?
How would you define public housing?
Not exactly owned by the city, but owned by the Housing Authority of Baltimore City, which is not exactly a city agency.
Right. I mean, the housing commissioner is paid by the city for one of his jobs, but the public housing is still owned by the federal government. Federal funds?
Yes, federal funds support it. This is very complicated. Okay. We've been doing research about it. Federal funds do support public housing and do pay, I guess, the commissioners the portion of his salary that's for being the HABC CEO. But the housing itself is owned, I believe, by the Housing Authority of Baltimore City, which is a body that was created by the Maryland General Assembly in 1937 and then authorized to do business by the Baltimore City Council on December 13th of 1937.
Anybody want to add to any of that? Okay, so that's it. And all right, so let's go to another caller here, then we'll come back to our panel. 410-319-8888. Jacqueline, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Jacqueline. Very well. Good morning.
Good. The caller that just called, I'm glad he did ask that question so it can be clarified, okay? Because we are a separate entity than Baltimore City. But the problem came in the beginning when Martin O'Malley was mayor, and he combined HABC with the city and started calling it Baltimore Housing, okay? From that point, our funding started dwindling. And another key point is that the gentleman that answered the other gentleman's question, yes, the federal government do fund HABC, but it's comprised of more monies than that. Residents, rents also is included in that. And then you have an operating budget. And then we had a budget called community block grant monies. For how long, I don't know, but they have stopped putting the community block grant monies into public housing. There's a board in Baltimore City, which Johns Hopkins have a lot to do with, and it's called a 2040 vision. And this board meets, and they will plan out Baltimore City, okay? All during half of these meetings, they are planning out how to get rid of public housing. And you're absolutely correct. We do have prime land, and all these communities that they are targeting are sitting in communities that the city wants to control, just like they did the four high-rise developments. Okay, you notice where they were. Federal government land is prime land. Now, for them to try to come in now and put HABC under private management, you first have to go back and discover what happened to all the monies that HABC did have. Where did it go? Okay? And when you start tracking the money, then you will see how we got into this dilemma. We had a budget that where when developments would need capital grant funding, they planned it out year by year, and they still sit there and do those budgets year by year and plan the work out.
So, gentlemen, you raised some important issues here, and I'd like us all to wrestle with what you've just raised, this question of the money, because this is a big piece of it. I mean, you know the housing budget, as we talked about earlier, lost over half the money, down to $42 billion, and less now even, going to public housing from the federal government. But what about what Jacqueline's raising, about where the money went? What do we know about that? What about those questions? What questions are not answered that she's raising? Do we have anybody's comment on that? Well, Jeff?
I hesitate to comment on that. There was a time some years ago when our local housing agency had to send a lot of money back to HUD, but I think that was before our current housing commissioner took over. And as best I know, they're managing the resources they have in a reasonable way. I don't know that they aren't. The resources that they have are completely inadequate. That's for sure. However, there are alternatives that we will continue to talk about to giving or selling this housing to private developers who will make profits from it. Because as Floyd mentioned before, the prime directive for a private developer is to make profits. Not to be humanitarians. But public housing is a need that needs to be filled. And profits shouldn't be made from it.
So, gentlemen, I can see the gentleman from public housing are all wanting to have something to say. Mark, and then go to the Floyd next to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Get that mic over the floor, I'm sorry.
As far as where the monies are going, I'm really concerned about how they're going to take care of us American citizens. Everybody is talking about doing this and doing that, but the poor are getting poor and the rich are getting richer, as far as I can see. You know? It's not, they're not spreading the wealth that's, that, you know, the great American melting pot that it is.
Because, I mean, it's very clear, we have to point out one thing about public housing, and give me the right percentage, but people who live in public housing, some people have the misunderstanding that they are free. But it's a percentage of whatever income you have, correct?
Correct.
That
yes.
is what pays for the rent. What
right.
is that, 30%? 30%. So it's 30% of Social Security check plus, or veterans benefits and Social Security plus, or whatever it is, your retirement plus, that's what you pay for rent.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Right. So, I mean, that's, I think, an important point to throw out, that this is not free housing. It's housing that people actually pay for, which Jacqueline was also saying as well, that some of the rents come from here.
And being with the voucher program, a lot of the residents are excited about the vouchers, and they jump in from buildings and their homes and going with this voucher program, which is not really guaranteed. It's stable, you know. And when you tell them that, they don't see it. They don't understand where we're coming from.
So we've just got a note, and we're going to go to Shaka and Clarence who called in, but we just got a note that the union officials, I think, are here or on my phone. We'll find out in a minute, and that they have a meeting they have to get to by 11, so they have to come into the studio early. Mm-hmm. So we're going to play a little musical chairs for a moment and bring them in to sit and talk with us for a bit and then have you all finish the conversation. Is that okay? Is that fair?
Not a problem.
So we're going to take a brief break, give us some beautiful music, brother, and while we switch chairs. All right, this is Mark Steiner, and we can always overcome any scheduling dilemmas that take place, and we are doing one right now. We are here with Anthony Coates, who is local president of Ask Me Local 647, Baltimore City Housing Authority. Lucky Crosby, senior, who called into the show last week, who is a maintenance mechanic, who has worked for the Baltimore City Housing Authority for a decade, and called in when he did call in to talk about lack of clothing and equipment men and women had to work with. We're also joined by Paul Wallace, who we met the other day at the Real News, who is vice president of the Ask Me Local 647. Gentlemen, good to have you all with us.
Morning.
Morning.
And still in the studio with us are from the panel of House Residents. Mitch Peterson is still here with us, as is Floyd Gross and Jeff Singer. So we have a party going on. 410-319-8888. You can join us here. We'll get to these calls coming in. You can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. And Shaka and Clarence, Sue and Tim, we are going to get to your calls. Be patient. We're going to come there because you all have interesting things to chime in here. You'll probably go to Sue next, who's a new caller. 410-319-8888. Anthony Coates, how are you? Good to have you in the studio.
I'm fine.
So let's get to the point about the situation of the workers in this whole change of management of housing. I think you remember this very well, Jeff, when we had the show with Mr. Graziano. He was very clear in saying that he couldn't comment really too much about what was going to happen to the workers because it would be done by attrition, that there were going to not be any great layoffs, that things weren't going to change that much, and that, you know, but this is not really this is not part of the issue. Clearly, Anthony Coates, do you have a different perspective?
There's a number of issues. Our contract has been breached. They haven't contacted us in the 90-day period. 90-day period that they should have in the contractual agreement, which brings us here today. And I've told Mr. Graziano and Mr. Scott, you know, about the changes in making such a change in the great magnitude that they're doing. They need to contact the public first and have a public meeting with the tenants also, and not just in pockets where they're just meeting with a choice few people. You need to let the whole public know what your plans are and how it's going to affect them. Right now, we don't have any concrete information that we have requested in writing about how many people are going to be affected. And they're constantly talking about not having monies and using contractors and temporary workers. That's additional cost from what I understand. You know, if you don't have any money, why are you spending additional monies when you can place people in those jobs instead of using temporary workers? they like I said, they never talked to unions, and they never talked to the tenants to have a discussion. The tenants are interested in ownership where we can make an intelligent decision.
Now, you said that earlier to me, Anthony. Let me just very quickly, because I want to ask Mitch Peterson this question very quick and come back to the other two members of the union. Because when we had a meeting talking about this the other day, where these three gentlemen from the union were in this meeting to talk about what was going on, trying to get our hands around all of it. And so the question came up, who talked to the tenants? Like in your building at Chase, did they come in and have a long conversation with all the people in the building?
They came in and had a minimal conversation. They didn't give you any direct positives as far as what is going to be happening. They did come in. But still, a lot of people are lost because they don't know exactly what's going to happen. You know, I would say community land trust for the residents that are in these buildings. Because if you give a person ownership, then what you do is you instill in them, oh, this is mine, I need to take care of this. You know, so when they came in, they talked to us. But a lot of the information, I tried to talk to my president in my building at a meeting that we had on Friday. She would not let me open my mouth. She basically told me, shh. I was like, wow. So they're trying to keep this on a hush-hush. But as many people as possible to get involved and get a good base of people and maybe march on City Hall to let the people in public housing know that this is what we need to do.
So, and we'll come back to that idea. We're not letting that one down. But and I think it was you, Paul Wallace, the other day. Maybe it wasn't you. Either you or Lucky, but you guys will straighten it out, said that the first people to lose their jobs here
are residents
who could, well, tell us. Paul, go ahead, Paul. Then come back closer to the mic, bro.
A bunch of individuals retired on fixed incomes. Mm-hmm. So the security job or the monitor's job is a supplemental income. And then we had a lot of people that come out of the programs and things like that that come out of public housing that we revamped and got their spirit up where they got back into the workforce. It kind of creates a low self-esteem type of thing where you build them up and now you're getting ready to just cut their legs from them. You not give them nothing to fall back on or nothing like that. Like we asked them repeatedly how it's going to affect us, how many people it's going to affect, so that we can get prepared to prepare them for other jobs and get them the necessary help and things that they need. Where they fall at if they have to come back to public housing. Because right now, that's the situation that they're going to put them in. Some of them, they're going to be out.
Because what you're talking about, the women, mostly women you're talking about,
yes,
who are not union members, but they are women.
Yes, they are union members.
Obviously, they are union members.
The building monitors are union members.
But they're the women, when you first come into a public housing, they're there to kind of greet
buzz you in, take your ID, sign you in, find out what apartment you're going to.
Those are the women we're talking about. They're going to be losing their jobs, right?
And keep in mind that over 68% of the housing employees are former housing residents. And some of them still do. The women in the building monitors, what we're talking about specifically on this point, 80% of those still live in public housing. Now, remember, I have a horse in this race because I'm employed by the Baltimore City Housing Authority. So in saying that, I just want to be a full disclosure on that part. But when we talk about fairness in public housing, where is the fairness done to the employees? They herded us in like cattle and told us Mr. Anthony Scott, who is the union busser from Richmond, Virginia, hired by this commissioner, and Sean Buchanan, who is his enforcer from the state of New Jersey, they told us what they want to do. They have not had an open, clear, honest conversation with the union. But if, from my understanding of the rental assistance demonstration program, it's a program set up by George W. Bush. What Democratic administration will accept anything from George W. Bush? Now, here we go in Baltimore. I work at the Housing Authority. I work at Westport. That's where I'm assigned. If you know anything about Westport Homes, it's close to the new casinos that were being built. They tore down one whole side of Westport where it's this vacant land. I wonder what they're going to put there. Would it be the hotel?
So I'm going to bring you back in here, Anthony Coates, for a comment. Let's go to the link. Let's go call in here and come right back to you at 410-319-8888. You can comment. Let's go to Sue in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Well, the union makes us strong, so I hope that fight goes on. Then concerning privatization of housing. Am I on the air?
Go ahead, Sue, we're listening to you.
Concerning privatization, I don't think that certain things should be privatized, you know, like schools. You're not supposed to make money out of education. You're supposed to educate. And for public housing, you're not supposed to be making money out of public housing. You're supposed to be housing. So I think that that's something that needs to be brought in mind. I know all over the country, I know in New York, you have a lot of projects, and they're located maybe by the water or near downtown.
Right.
And then they just keep coming up with all these new rules. Oh, if somebody in your family gets arrested, or if you smoke in your building and you have a child, those are grounds to be put out of public housing. So, you know, those are just some thoughts. Now, a question I have is, how are Section 8 people affected by this? Because I did hear that Section 8 buildings, if there are such things, were being, those people were being relocated. But it might have been public housing and not Section 8. So I wanted to know, what is the deal? What is the plan?
Gotcha. For Section 8. And we'll jump into that. Let me just say, people can move out of public housing for all kinds of reasons, including if you had a child or they came back and said, can I stay with you for a few days in a place to live? The other reasons to put you out of the building, just because you want to take care of a family member. There are all kinds of reasons they have for putting people out of public housing. But who wants to tackle the Section 8 question? Jeff, do you know anything about what she was asking?
A little bit, perhaps. What the RAD program does essentially is it converts public housing into private ownership with Section 8 subsidies. But the Section 8 subsidies don't initially go to the tenant. They go to the building and the building owner, and they're called project-based vouchers. So it's sort of true what she's saying, and it's sort of – I don't want to alarm people unduly, but the lack of information that folks have is the reason – for all of this turmoil, I mean, aside from the whole plan to sell public housing, there's not enough information for the tenants and for the community to make good sense of what's happening.
So, Anthony, let me bring you back in here because I know you guys got to run to a meeting. But so give us, I mean, what do you all do now? I mean, what is it that the union can do, will do? How could you stand up to what's going on?
Well, we've been making alliances with the public. All the religious organizations, all the tenant council people, and our local politicians and elected officials. Today we have a group of people that are going to Annapolis. We're going there where they make the laws and have given the laws for collective bargaining to hold these people accountable to assist us. And we're going to take a group of people to let them know how they treated us in an illegal form.
When you say illegal, what do you mean they did something illegal? What is illegal about what they did vis-a-vis the union?
The way they didn't contact us according to our union agreement. They did not contact us in the three-month period according to our contractual agreement. They have breached the law.
So what did the contract say? You were just holding it up, Lucky.
This basically that they must notify us in writing within 90 days and any change as far as they was going to do layoffs or if they have not contacted us. And this has been the scary point of it all. We have 331 members in our union, and the union need to understand that together we can beat this, we can defeat this, because we understand that Mr. Graziano has been the long-tenured housing commissioner in Baltimore City, but yet still, there's no accountability to him. He bringing a staff where none of our city, where none of my residents of Baltimore City or residents of the state of Maryland, yet still they make the decision as far as who head goes in the chopping block. And right now, it may be Al, but every union in Baltimore City needs to be alarmed by this decision made by the mayor, made by the commissioner. Nobody want to take responsibility for what's going on. Nobody want to be open and honest and be fair with us. All we're saying, we should have been a stakeholder at the table. These decisions should not have made, would have been made without contacting the union when we would have had a viable option for this. Mr. Graziano keep talking about money. Well, I like to ask the question, where is the money, Mr. Graziano? Madam Mayor, where is the money?
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Tim. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, I asked a question earlier, but another thing that I wanted to know was, what is the demand for new public housing units? Because I keep hearing, I guess some of your panelists saying that, you know, you're making developers rich. I thought low-income housing tax credits were for the stability or the production of new public housing or rental assistance housing. And if there's a large demand in the city for that, if the city is saying they don't have the money to currently manage the property, let alone produce new public housing, where does everybody think it's going to come from? They think Martians are going to come here and stuff. And, you know, I mean, to say the problems for the city. I'm a stakeholder who lives in a community near public housing, and I don't think we're very much part of that conversation as well. I hear this union guy talking, and I see them further down on the totem pole from the low-income housing residents or the stakeholders surrounding the community that live in that community as well. I'm a little less concerned about union and union jobs, per se, as I am just the overall community at large. It's not just public housing community.
Okay, Tim, let me let Mr. Wallace, his vice president, has got a response, I think.
Yeah, for the record, we live in the neighborhood. We grew up in the neighborhood. We are part of Sandtown, White Lock, and all those different neighborhoods. We're invested in Baltimore City. I volunteered for years with my kids. I have little girls. I volunteered for years at the football program at Mount Royal Recreation Center, basketball. I referee, and I do things pro bono sometimes just to keep these kids from dying on the street. So don't get on the radio and say you're not concerned about union workers, because I'm you. I'm just like you. I live in a neighborhood. I'm not doing as well as I possibly could do, but I don't need to lose my job. Now, do I need to be a statistic or be homeless? Think about that. You know, think about the kids coming up. Think about the people that had problems and stuff like that, that we work with the union to get them jobs. Think about them turning that back on your son or your daughter if, God forbid, they start using drugs or have a problem, and that housing in the city of Baltimore used to be a mechanism for them to have employment after they done made mistakes in life. You know, think about that. Go back to your biblical upbringing. That's what you need to do, because it's all about the people. We're not just complaining about ourselves. We're complaining about the next generation that's coming up that see us working. We have little kids out there that I remember when I came up, I was off from school one day. It was a holiday. They were rebuilding a new school right across the street on Curry Street, right there at St. Peter's Claver, 104. I used to go to that school. Uh-huh. They were building a school across the street. I was supposed to go home. I was over there. They gave me $60 that day. I was humping a wheelbarrow up and down there. I wanted to go to work then at 7 years old. So that's what you need to think about. That's what the public need to think about. I'm not just crying for me. We got people coming up today that got all kinds of problems, but that don't make them bad people. They just were unfortunate, and that's what the union is about. That's what Dr. King, Marcus Garvey, all those people took and came out and put their lives on the line for. So you think about that.
That's Paul Wallace, the vice president of the union. We have to take a break. We're going to break here with, and very eloquently put, I might add, we're going to break here with another piece of Billy Stewart. It is his birthday today, and we are talking about Sitting in the Park by Billy Stewart. And I want to, gentlemen, I know you guys have to run to a meeting. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
So, union members, good to have the three with us. Please, you are going to come back.
Yes, we will.
Anthony Coates is president of the union. You just heard Paul Wallace, who's vice president of the union, and Lucky Crosby, who's a maintenance mechanic and an activist in the union, who's been in the housing authority for a long time. Thank the three of you for being here with us
today. And Mark, thank you for having us. Thank you for having us.
And we'll see you again soon.
All right.
We're going to come back with our housing residents as we continue our conversation about the future of public housing. Clarence, your next caller up. If we didn't have something so important to talk about, like the future of housing for the people of Baltimore, I'd have to let Billy Stewart play on, but we can't. So we are here with our guests. Continue the conversation. The union members had to go to a meeting now in Annapolis. So we slid them in the middle. We're still here with Jeff Singer and Jessica Lewis is back in the studio, along with Floyd Gross, Floyd Vines, Mitch Peterson, and Mark Schumann. And you at 410-319-8888. Before we go to Clarence, our next caller up, and Shaka from your newspaper, who's on the line as well. As the gentleman from the union were leaving, and I thought that that particular segment, Paul Wallace was very emotional and moving and thoughtful in his response about what unions do. And as we were doing that, Mitch Peterson, you said it made you think you had something to say about that.
Yeah, it kind of put a fire in me, because you have to realize that, as I was saying earlier, this is going to affect everyone. You talking about unemployment? If this goes through, then the unemployment rate just rose. You, not only are you disenfranchising people out of their homes, but you're adding to unemployment. So how can you say this is a good thing when you're taking away people's jobs? When you have a possibility of putting people in the streets, there has to be some alternatives. One, as I was saying, was community land trust, you know, where you give the residents control of their future.
Now, what does that mean when we talk about community land trust? How would that work? What does that exactly mean? We've tossed that word around. Who can kind of give us a sense of what it means to have a community land trust?
In a general sense, it's a model that is kind of, it's not a public model, it's not a private model, it's a shared or limited equity model, and they can be set up by nonprofits with a ground lease, so that the property, the ground is owned by a nonprofit, the property itself can be owned by any entity, personal, an individual, a company. But it has a contract with the nonprofit that owns the ground underneath that it has, considering whichever way the bylaws are written, that the community that lives there, whether it's a single family home, whether it's one of these big public housing high rises, would be controlled by the residents that live there. They would have the ultimate say in how their housing needs are best met. And that contract would not allow someone to turn that property over at a profit. It disincentivizes profit, jacking up the prices, inflating the price of the house and turning it over at a profit. It's geared toward maximizing permanent affordability and a community control of those properties. And I think that's, as we see that looks like public housing is getting phased out, that's looks like it's not going to be an option 40 years from now when these affordability contracts are up. What does that say about the future of public housing in Baltimore? And when we see that the private market is failing to provide responsible, safe housing for low-income tenants in Baltimore, we see it every day in the work that we do in Right to Housing Alliance. We need to be looking at these alternative models that allow residents to have control over how their housing needs are met. And disincentivize someone making a huge profit off of it, because we see that that ambition is in direct contradiction to meeting people's needs. And that's, sorry to go on a rant, but that's
No. I mean, so how do you, how are community land trusts instituted? How do they become a reality? What does it take for them to become a reality? What does it mean for that?
There is a group in Baltimore, the Housing Roundtable, that has been meeting for the last...
I sat in with that day with...
Yes,
at the church.
You came right. there. Yeah. And right, the group right. is meeting with people who have expertise in this area, who have experience in exploring other communities where there are land trusts. There's at least one in Baltimore that we know of that we're working with now, Charm City Land Trust over in McKeldry Park. But yes, you get a lawyer to help you draft the papers. You set up a nonprofit organization that then owns the ground. And in the incorporation papers, anyone is forbidden from selling the property for a profit. It takes property like housing, it takes it out of the speculative market so that profits aren't made from it, and it's devoted to its actual purpose, which is to provide homes for folks. Mm. And it does that for at least 99-year period. And it's the only reasonable way to assure that more and more of our neighbors have an affordable place to live, until or unless we can change the way the federal government is unfunding, defunding public housing.
Excuse me. The claim.
Let me get the mic to you so you can.
The claim that we were told so far was that they brought in investors because they were funding the building. You know, they didn't say they were funding the building for profit. You know, you understand what I'm saying? They was trying to help, but they helping with one hand and grabbing back with the other. Now, that's not helping us or the people of Baltimore that can't afford to do better.
They didn't say that they were funding it for profit. Mitchell Peterson here. No. They didn't say that they were funding it for profit, but you got to realize what a corporation's mandate is. Their mandate is to make money for their shareholders. So if that is your mandate, then of course you're going to make a profit. Now, it's going to come on the backs of people like you and I. That's the bad part about it.
I mean, the Brew article, one of the things he said, that the Secretary Donovan said, and then Clarence and Shaka, we're going to come to your calls one, two, right after this, but I want to read this because it's what you're talking about, and let's clear it up. Secretary Donovan said, noted that RAD had been described as a privatization program and argued that the term is not accurate since housing authorities will retain an ownership interest in the units. What does that mean?
I think it was 85 to 50. I'm sorry, Floyd Vines here. When I had Sean came to our building and I asked that question specifically, well, how much will these private people coming in own of this location? And I was given the number, I think he mentioned 85, and HUD was still, or Baltimore Housing was still on 15%, and over time they would have the option to either give it back or sell it back. And as Jeff pointed out, and Mitchell Peterson also, as we go forward in the future, what I understand about the global economy, federal government may not have money. Nobody might have the money to buy it back or want to give it back when profits will be the motivating cause.
Do we know, were you about to say something, Jeff, about the ownership of this land?
That's what we understand, yes. The Housing Authority will maintain some portion of it. However, the controlling portion of it is going to a private
entity,
developer, and in some cases a for-profit, in some cases not. For profit, but it's going to leave, the control of it is going to leave the public sector. It is privatization. I don't care what the secretary says.
Let me open the phones here, 410-319-8888, and go to Clarence. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Steiner. Thank you.
Good morning, Clarence.
When the commissioner was on your show a few weeks back, he was describing the conditions of that blue, what they call the blue building, how there was no money to fix the elevators and stuff and things in that building that needed. And I thought to myself, well, if there's a budget problem there, can you directly relate that to the fact that you have hundreds and thousands of landlords in Baltimore City who are collecting elaborate, you know, with outrageous prices, subsidies from the government for the property that they're renting? If you were to go through this city and look at some of the conditions of the Section 8 houses, and what these landlords are getting for it, then I don't think there would be a budget problem. Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Does that make sense to anybody what he was saying? Not that he's saying it didn't make sense, I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. Those of us who know about money and housing and how that works.
Well, Floyd Vines, he mentioned the conditions, and, you know, they're being funded, and sometimes the money they're getting is not, you know, is way more than what they're giving. And I, you know, preface that with my daughter-in-law, where she lives, the housing unit is basically funded mostly, I think 99% of residents there receive a voucher or some form of subsidy. But when I look at what they get for the money that they're paying out of their pocket plus the subsidy they get through housing, I was like, wait a minute, somebody's getting gypped here. Or like you said, we know they're not getting gypped. The profits of what they're not getting is going directly to privatized realtors.
But let me ask you all this question here. I mean, one of the things that's very clear from both the housing workers when Lucky called into the show the last time, not when he was here today, what was said on this program when the commissioner was on, what's been said before the commissioner was on, when you were here, Jeff and others, was that whether you take Jay, I don't know, I have not been seen the other buildings, but Jay Story, let's say, mm-hmm. That has some real serious structural issues.
Mm-hmm.
Flooding, elevators out,
mm-hmm.
very serious issues. So public housing units do have some serious kind of issues that have to be addressed in terms of not just maintenance, but getting them into livable conditions.
Sure.
How do we do that? I mean, when the commissioner says there's an $800 million bill to be paid to fix up our buildings, we couldn't do that in 40 years, whatever number he used, 100 years, I forget what number he used.
200 years.
So how does that happen? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, we have Dave Schott wrote in, before we go to Shaka, Dave Schott wrote in, he said, I like the idea of increasing percentage of revenue from casino profits going to public housing. Perhaps a lottery can direct funds in this direction. Can the city controller's office, Joan Pratt, or a similar office on the state level pay more of a role in seeing that funds directed towards public housing, which don't seem to be going in that direction? I appreciate that folks that want to challenge the present course of public policy, writes in Dave. But the question is, how do we pay for it? How do we pay for it?
I think Floyd Vaz here. I think we can pay for it in this manner. The brothers that was just here from the union, they need to give them more funding and more money so they have more jobs for more apprentices, for more young people in this city, whatever color, to have the training. The money will then be reinvested. That way we won't have to talk about putting out some special funds or the government giving any special money. The money will be there. That will be the same money, and we need to increase it. Me and Jeff spoke earlier about that. We talked about the number of amount of money that's already not being asked for. Every time we ask for a certain amount, it seems that the Congress approves it, so we just need to maybe ask for more, and then the money won't be privatized or profit-making for some private corporation, but it will go right back to making jobs,
okay,
training.
But I want to, so that sounds great, Floyd, but the question I have is, where does the money come from to even get this started? How do we pay for it? If people are going to say, no, RAD is not the right way to go, then what is the way to go? Where does the money come from to pay for the...
We take it from the military-industrial complex. We don't need more bombs. We need more houses. We need more jobs. We need more training. You know, and that's not a matter of, like, what amount or where does it come from. Can it be done? Yes, it can be done. Should we do it? Yes, we should do it. Let's do it. You know, and like you said, there are things we don't want to happen. We don't want to go blow up people in the Ukraine, or we don't want to go to Russia and start a fight over things that we shouldn't have anything to do with in the first place. We have too many problems right here we should take care of.
Is anyone else to chime in on this?
Yeah, personally, I do believe the same thing. Because if you take care of your own will take care of you.
Correct.
Without a doubt. And when you talk
Mark,
about...
No, go ahead, and then we'll mention that, Mark, and then we'll open the phones back up.
When you talk about funding, you look at what they said when they had the lottery. They said, well, the lottery, this money that's going to be funding for state education. Well, if you look at where that money went at, it went to build the stadiums downtown. When they got the stadiums, they said, this money is going to be for education. Where did it go at? It went to build another stadium. And now you're building casinos. So what needs to happen is that we need to really say, if you're going to say that this money is earmarked to go to a specific program, then we as taxpayers need to make sure where that money goes at. See, it's all about a paper trail. If you follow the money, and then you'll know exactly what happened.
Mark, grab the mic and pull it closer to you, Mark, would you?
Yeah, I think that the money can come from a lot of existing income that the city has. I mean, the casinos are supposed to benefit the people. Affordable housing is the number one thing
that people need
because it's health care, it's a lot of different things. When I was homeless, I was a full-blown insulin-dependent diabetic. When I got housing, it slowly digressed until now I don't take any medication. And that's a direct result of housing. Affordable housing is the critical thing. And the money needs to be prioritized. That should be the number one priority, is to make sure people have housing.
Maybe then you have to renegotiate the deal that you cut with the private owners of the casinos who are getting a lot of stuff so the more money comes back to the public.
Yeah. Mark, you've mentioned it on several of your shows. They don't mind spending money for housing people as long as the housing they're talking about is jail cells. They'll spend money for housing.
But I think that one of the things I was pushing here, I'm going to go to the phones here and come back to this question I had earlier, which is, if there's to be an opposition to RAD, and then people, I think, in the large community who don't live in public housing, don't have any relationship to public housing, understand public housing, which you're getting an education from listening to programs like this to understand what was really going on, and what our commitment is, by the way, is to get inside of public housing and bring stories back on the radio from inside public housing, from residents and workers' perspectives, to feel what places are like that people live in. You have to have a kind of an alternative that says this is what should happen instead. Don't give us RAD. And you know what I'm saying?
Go ahead.
Well, I think this organizing process of figuring out exactly what residents, and we've been working with Floyd here and Floyd and Mitch, and now hopefully with Mark here as well, to start to actually reach out and figure out what residents know, what they're thinking. There aren't alternatives yet figured out. And I think that's part of the working process with the residents, with attorneys, with, you know, housing advocates and experts like Jeff. Thank God he's here. You know, but this is a long process that's resident driven. And I think that figuring out what you all want to do and what you already know and what we can do to help, you know, figure out the specifics around that, I think it just hasn't happened yet. It's very, very new.
Mm-hmm.
And it's moving quickly, so I think there's a push to actually figure this stuff out quickly. But
there are ideas, and we need to be talking more and organizing with the tenants and the union members and the people who live around them, the housing developments. But ideas like if we set up community land trusts, as Mitch has mentioned, for the public housing buildings, I believe they would then be eligible for the low-income housing tax credits, the nonprofits. Why not? So that money, instead of going into profits for investors and developers, could go into fixing up the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
That's one idea. I've mentioned the general obligation bonds that the city issues, but the state does that as well, and we could probably – it seemed like the state might start to issue some to help the developers rehab the building. If there were no developers, then there's no developers' fees, there's no profit involved. Mm-hmm. We've got to get out of the idea that the only solutions come when there are profits.
Here.
And I have heard that there's the idea of maybe floating bonds to help developers redevelop these properties has been talked about in Annapolis and here. So we got to find out more about that.
Cut out the developers. Give the money to the people.
Yeah. The middleman is not needed.
410-319-8888. Shaka, you're on the air.
Hey, Tommy, what's happening?
Hey, Shaka.
It's good to be home, I tell you. You are the two words I got out of both of your shows, I tell you, alliances for alternatives. I mean, we have depth on every in-depth article of quality of life. I mean, we definitely have to put humanity back into the equation. When you spoke earlier about the legislation versus the high court's decision, we have that same mirror image right here in Baltimore with the misrepresentation of the people by elected officials making decisions behind closed doors and yell transparency every opportunity they get to get on the air somewhere. I think for forums such as we're having now and one like we had yesterday at Real News, our family down there, to bring awareness to and to having the Union Brothers so eloquently put it, that, you know what I mean, we are not only citizens, we're part of that community and would like to see our culture commune in a city in which the citizens are supposed to be by the people and for the people. So I commend all of us for coming together because we at Watts, otherwise known as Word on the Street, champion causes for the impoverished and the homeless in order to make ways that we know the trials and tribulations of how it is to go from the sidewalks and gutters from the prisons and try to become a part of a society that says, yes, we are rehabilitated and we want to be progressive and positive entities within our community. So I thank y'all and I love the show, baby.
Thank you, Shaka. Thank you for calling in. Shaka works also at Word on the Street, a newspaper that our guest, Mark Schumann, is the editor of.
Yes.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Jacqueline. Might be the same Jacqueline called earlier. Is that right, Jacqueline? Jacqueline, is that you? All right. Jacqueline, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
Good. Did you turn off your radio so we could hear you?
Yeah, I turned it down.
Okay, good.
Can you hear me now?
We got you.
Okay. I just want to comment on your question when you asked where do we get the money to start doing this if we don't go to the RAD program, okay? Like I told you earlier, we have pots of money already. These problems did not just pop up. They've been persistent for 20 years or less, okay? But the situation is they allowed it to get to this point because they had that agenda taking over these properties. Okay, people sit back and let stuff just happen. We have a budget hearing meeting every year for each development to meet with housing management to go over their operating their budget. And it's just like your home. If the roof fall off, yes, you get the roof replaced because it can affect everything in the house. So, no, you're not going to get it all done all at once. You plan it out. But they don't want to do it that way. And everybody on your show is kind of like on point. But I just hope one day, real soon, you have a panel with residents. And I'm talking
about this. The people in this panel, there are four residents sitting in this room.
I know what you're saying.
We have four residents sitting in the room. They're on the panel.
I know the residents are there, and they're on point, and their concerns are legitimate. And I'm just saying, without all the outside entity right there, I'm just saying,
I'm not sure what you mean. We have four residents here. We had three union workers, two of whom grew up in public housing and work now for the housing department. And the only two people in the room, one used to is an instructor. He's running healthcare. Almost the other one's a housing organizer. So I'm not quite sure who you think should be here that's not here.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be there. It's good that they're there. We need to hear their views, too. But I'm saying residents, because like the guy said, they did not do the 90-day thing and the 90-day letter stating what they were going to do. So residents need to be there to say, just residents need to be there to say to Graviano and the mayor and the governor, whomever, that what our feelings are. Just
gotcha.
What our feelings are. And here's the thing. Why is Graviano still employed if all this under his administration is deteriorating?
Good question, sister.
Well, that's a lot of speculation, but I'm not. We can't say anything, Jeff? And then,
yes, not about the housing commissioner, about people getting involved. There's a wonderful opportunity tonight for people to get involved. Tonight there's a public meeting on the Housing Authority's annual plan. It's at Pleasant View Gardens, 201 North Asquith Street at 6 p.m. And anyone can go there and express your concerns over the state of affordable housing in Baltimore. I would invite you all to please do that. It's not the only opportunity, but it's a great one.
Mitch?
And yes, and like the young lady was saying, I think what she was trying to infer was that there should be more residents here. There should be an outpouring, or should be a crying in the street of what's happening right now. That's what it should be. And I think that's what she was trying to really put across to us was like, you know, it's for y'all that you need to be 10,000 strong. So the meeting tonight at Pleasant View Gardens is an opportunity for anyone in public housing or anyone who's concerned, any concerned citizen, because not only is this going to affect public housing, but it's going to affect employment. It's going to affect health care, because if you put these people out in the streets, or in 10 years there's no more bond bills to pay for public housing, then you got sickness. You know, so it's going to affect a vast number of people. And I think what she was just trying to bring across was that it needs to be more.
Right, right. I agree. I misunderstood what she said at first, but I understood what she was saying when she came back and said it again. I understood that. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a big misconception among people that live in the public housing that they will be retaliated against for speaking up and coming forward on these issues. I've been coming forward on these issues for a few years now, and I've never been discriminated against. As a matter of fact, I have a hole in my wall that's been there for a year and a half that they've never fixed. So that means they don't care. Sorry. But, that's the main thing, is people do need to speak up, and I talk to a lot of people that come to me for information that are in public housing who should go directly to the meeting, and that's what I do. I want to encourage everybody that's in public housing, please step forward and pick up the banner, because we need more people involved.
Well, I do want to very quickly, Floyd, because we got to give him a mic. We have like 1 minute left.
I'm a member of the Resident Council for residents to be represented down HABC. But we bring back the information that is given us. We don't get a chance to help coordinate it. And the things that they're told to us, we're supposed to relate to the resident. Then the resident relates things to us to relate back to housing authority. But it stops right where they leave it at us.
So we have to leave that conversation here for this moment. We'll definitely come back to this over and over again. We are going to organize a town meeting with residents and invite the Housing Commissioner more to join that town meeting to continue this conversation. We'll be working with Real News to create a much broader look at this as well and continue our conversation on the future of public housing in Baltimore and what that means. I want to thank Jeff Singer, Jessica Lewis, Floyd Gross, Floyd Vines, Mitch Peterson, and Mark Schumann for joining us here in the studio today. Thank you all for taking your time.
Thank you for having us.
Love you, Lucy.
And earlier today, I want to thank Anthony Coates, Lucky Crosby, and Paul Wallace as well. Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's at MarylandEducators.org. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andre Milton, who crossed just over this weekend, is now a member of Kappa Alpha Psi. Our intern is Alex Boston. You can hear this show again by podcasting it on our website at steinershow.org or going to iTunes. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Stay involved and take care.